The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very, very good morning to you. How are you?
Boker Tov. Yeah, just trying to cope with the news coming out of Austria, out of Vienna, the whole attack that's happening in Vienna. I know initially there was a lot of concern that it might be related to anti-Semitism. I know that at least one of the areas, I think there are a number of different areas around the city where the attack is still ongoing. I think they're still searching out for people who might have been involved in the attack. But one of the areas of the city was quite near to where some of the shuls are in Vienna. And so there was some concern that it might be focused on the shuls, might be something anti-Semitic. I don't think that that has been conclusively proven yet. Or at all. And it seems as if the Jewish institutions, the shuls and other facilities, seem to be intact from what we can gather. But obviously a lot of sensitivity around Vienna, you know, harking back to Kristallnacht, or of course, took place outside shuls in Vienna. So, amongst other places. So a lot of sensitivity. And of course, we're all, eyes towards the US today, even though I don't think we're going to necessarily see a result in the very near future, but certainly a lot of interest there. And on the corona side, the outgoing coronavirus commissioner, Ronnie Gumzu, now expressing his concerns about an increase in the number of infections, having opened up the economy a little bit and sent children back to school. He's now saying that there's a worrying increase in the number of infections recorded, and he's made some recommendations in order to avoid another lockdown, which he thinks could come as soon as 3 to 4 weeks from now.
Oh, my goodness. But I thought he had, so to say, he's no longer involved, or is he?
He's still there. He's going to see his time out. I think he has until the end of this month, and then he is due to be replaced. So for the time being, he is still in the seat.
Right.
Not that he's had so much influence to
no,
begin with.
No, no one's taken him seriously. I'm sure, not for one moment. Yeah, did they actually take him seriously, the poor guy?
So I'm not sure that his comments will necessarily have any influence now, but certainly something that's worth listening to, even if the government may choose to go its own way in any event.
Absolutely. All right. Let's just talk about Benny Gantz, because this was a very strange comment that he made. Benny Gantz has admitted that he does not believe that the rotation for prime minister will actually take place. Now, none of us do. None of us ever did. But I would have at least thought that he thought it would. Why would he have now said this in public?
Well, yeah, I mean, the question is, you know, no matter what we all believe in private, the moment he makes a public statement which says that he does not for a moment believe that the rotation will take place, which means effectively that the agreement that is entered into with Prime Minister Netanyahu's Likud party in order to put together this coalition government, and which much of what he was looking for is really predicated on. I mean, this is an agreement. He's in the government as a result of this agreement. The main element of the agreement, as far as he is concerned, he's now publicly admitting he thinks will not actually transpire. So there is a question as to why he continues to adhere to the agreement if he's so convinced. I mean, I'm just thinking about it in kind of business terms, which I know is always a dangerous thing. But in business, if you are going to deliver goods to a party in exchange for them paying you money, and you know up front that they're not going to pay you the money, why would you deliver the goods?
And then talk about it in public saying, nah, I didn't ever think they were going to pay me the money.
Right. So he's saying it, but continuing to carry out whatever he's agreed to do as part of the coalition. And so, I'm just trying to work out what this means for Benny Gantz and what it means for his blue and white party, because, on the one hand, I think he's trying to present himself as being, the do-gooder in this whole constellation where there's so much, going on that is really not very, very good and not commendable, not to be respected at all. And he is the person who is effectively ensuring that we still continue to have a government. Because if he were to turn around and say, I don't believe the rotation is going to take place, I'm withdrawing my support from the government as a result of my lack of belief that you're going to fulfill your obligations, the government would have effectively collapsed. So I don't really know whether this is all about timing, whether he wants to try to see a budget passed and then bring the government down, whether he is planning to bring the government down at all, whether he's just going to continue to be what they would call in Israel the friar, the sucker, the person who is going about doing what he said he would do in full knowledge that he will not get in return what was agreed. I think it makes him look weak, certainly in the whole Israeli mentality. This makes him look particularly weak. We have a foreign minister, Gabi Ashkenazi, who is very strongly telling Gantz that it's now time for Blue and White to leave the government. I'm not really quite sure. I can't really imagine in my mind what would happen if they decided to leave the government. Because, you see, there is another point to this, which is that if they left the government and it caused an election as a result of that, the chances are that Blue and White would be really decimated in that election. Yeah. They would come out.
They haven't become stronger, certainly.
No, not at all. An election for them would not be a good thing. It also wouldn't be a good thing for the Likud if we were to believe the opinion polls as of today. So maybe Benny Gantz is saying, I'm sitting in my seat and I'm holding onto it very tightly because I know the alternative is a lot worse for me. And maybe even it makes me look, even if it makes me look a little silly right now and not weak and ineffective because I know that I'm not going to get my piece of the pie, but at least I have what I have right now, which is the Ministry of Defense and also, of course, the Ministry of Foreign Affairs. And there is no possible way in which the Blue and White Party would be able to command those positions if there was to be an election now. So maybe that's the logic.
Could well be, but very strange. Female IDF soldiers are for the first time being assigned roles that will allow them to cross into enemy territory. Why has the policy changed? What preempted this?
Well, I would like to really take this back, way back, to a decision that was made by the Supreme Court in 1994. And this was at the instigation of a very, very brave young lady, a South African immigrant to Israel by the name of Alice Miller, who challenged the IDF, the Israeli Air Force, in the Supreme Court because they wouldn't allow her to enter into the pilot's course because she was a woman. Now, Alice Miller happened to be someone with a civilian pilot license, and she was pursuing a degree in aerospace engineering. And when it came time for her to enlist, they would not allow her to enlist into the pilot's course. And she challenged that decision in the Supreme Court, and she won her case. Unfortunately, when it came time for her to be evaluated for pilot's course, she was found to be medically unfit. And so she never found her way through the pilot's course. But she did open the door for many, many other young women to follow in her footsteps. And for example, even in 2011, there were a record 5 female pilots who completed the pilot's course in the Israeli Air Force. And now we are seeing that particular mentality come through to combat units as well, which has been very, very controversial simply because there has been a concern about the possibility of female IDF soldiers being kidnapped by enemies and then the prospect of what may happen to them if they were to fall into captivity doesn't even bear consideration. Because our enemies are known to be particularly cruel, and if they were to be able to capture a female IDF soldier as opposed to a male, one imagines that they would take a real advantage of that, and the IDF has done everything in its power to avoid that. But the girls are fighting back, and they're saying that that particular consideration is not enough to convince us that we are prevented from taking on certain roles in the IDF. And in fact, recently, 10 female IDF soldiers from the Field Intelligence Corps will be making up a drone operating team. And that drone operating team will cross into enemy territory. This for the first time involving female IDF soldiers. So even though we're not necessarily talking about frontline combat roles, this is a role which involves crossing into enemy territory, which is very, very controversial indeed. And it doesn't even end there because during the earlier this year, there were 4 teenagers who petitioned the High Court to force the IDF to allow all potential recruits to try out for some of the elite commando units, regardless of their gender. And what the girls said was that they're not asking that the demands be changed in order to accommodate the female soldiers, but just that they are allowed to try out and qualify if they meet the standards. And of course, at the moment, for example, it's not only the elite commando units, it's also units like the Navy's Shayetet Shloshesre, which does not allow female soldiers, and also some of the armored brigades, submarines, and certain of the elite reconnaissance units still to this day do not allow female soldiers to join up, at least in frontline roles, because of the concerns about what may happen if they fall into enemy hands. It's a discussion which I think we should open up to the listeners, because I think it is a very controversial and a problematic issue to confront, but our female soldiers wish to be taken into consideration for all possible roles. Should we allow that? Yes or no?
What do you think about that? 34519 or 0618951019. So to date, female soldiers were not allowed to cross into enemy territory. This has now changed. What do you think about that? Should female soldiers be allowed to cross into enemy territory? It's so interesting because our gut instinct has to be, well, of course they should. They should be allowed every opportunity that a male soldier has, but it doesn't, of course, take into account some of the very real fears and aspects around it. You know, it really does challenge us in many ways, doesn't it, Anthony?
It really does challenge us, because I think instinctively we really do wish as a society to make it as equal as we possibly can. Absolutely. There can be no doubt about that. I think that we are all, you know, all of our instinct is to allow the girls to do whatever they wish to do, the same as the boys. And, you know, we're very fortunate in that, you know, in our army, we do make a huge effort to try to put round pegs into round holes, to fit people into the jobs that really suit them best, not to force people to do jobs that they don't feel comfortable with or don't feel particularly good or don't have the skills to do. And so in those respects, we do want those girls who serve in the IDF to feel that they have a fulfilling role, one which suits their skills and one which suits what their desires are, what their drive is. Now, there are many who sit back and say, listen, you know, I would like to spend my time doing a relatively easy job. I'm not looking for anything too challenging. Put me into some sort of an office job or, you know, some sort of an intelligence job, which involves being in one location and not having to travel around and not being too exposed to the enemy. You know, there are those people who do that. And I think that, you know, the IDF does try to fit those people into what they want rather than to force people against their wishes, because fortunately we do have enough volunteers, people who come along to volunteer to do some of the frontline jobs. And so there isn't the necessity, at least at the moment, to push people to do things that they don't want to do. But do we accommodate these girls, and do we bear the consequences of what may chas v'chalila happen in the event that the enemy does capture them?
Yeah, Mervin says, no, definitely not. And I just want to count how many exclamation marks he has used. Six, I think. It's either five or six. And the word not and no is in uppercase, in capital letters. So I think Mervin feels quite strongly
He really believes this, does he?
Yeah, he believes whatever he is standing behind. Finally, Anthony, also sticking with the army, an interesting one as well. A bill is being introduced to the Knesset that will allow for burial of non-Jewish IDF soldiers to be buried alongside Jewish fellow soldiers in military cemeteries. How is this being reconciled in terms of halachic restrictions?
So, of course, halachically, if we want to go by the letter of the law and the common practice that we've adopted up until now, which is that that when Jews are buried in a cemetery, that there is a separation between the Jewish area of the cemetery and the non-Jewish area of the cemetery. That's what we see in almost every cemetery around the world. And that is also true of IDF military cemeteries, where there are so many people now who are serving in the IDF who are halachically not Jewish for whatever reason. And when, if and when they happen to fall in battle, their burial is separate because of the halachic considerations. It's long been a thorn in the side of the IDF and a real dilemma. But now it seems that they found a way somehow to bury those non-Jewish soldiers alongside the Jewish ones. Apparently what they're going to do is to dig the grave slightly different depths in order to try to somehow reconcile the whole halachic issue. But I think the most important thing is that we value and respect the memory of those, even those non-Jews who fight in the IDF and God forbid, fall in battle. And what the Knesset is also saying is that we should accommodate those who have been entitled to Israeli citizenship through the law of return, which effectively means that there is some Jewish blood in their history, even if it comes through the male line, and the law of return does allow them to become Israeli citizens. This is how it's being reconciled. I think it's a very positive move. I think we somehow need to find a way to respect those who fall in IDF uniforms alongside their Jewish comrades in the same way.
Absolutely right. It is 8:01. Anthony Reich, thank you. As always, we will catch you same time tomorrow.